Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another very special episode of the Motorsport Republica podcast. We are lucky enough to have our first international guest, World Superbike rider Philip Ottle. Philip, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for the invitation.
How's your time been in Australia?
As always, Australia is a really nice place to be, and I really like it here. It's much hotter than at home, so
yeah.
I'm fortunate.
Yeah, definitely. How was your off-season? What did you get up to? How was all that?
After the last race in Jerez, I took some weeks off because there was time to do it. Maybe also the first time since a few years, especially the year before we had Australia was the last race.
Yeah.
And I stayed here for two more weeks and until I was at home 4th of December. So it was super, super late. And then we started already the preparation for the new season.
Of course.
So this year was easy because I took 3 weeks off and then started training again. And we had good weather at home, so could train physically and was good. And then I went to Spain to train with the stock Yamaha for the first time.
Yeah, beautiful.
And that was good, actually. Smooth. And then we had already the first test.
Yeah.
And then we are here already.
That's pretty crazy. It goes really, really quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Normally, I still have two plates in my shoulders from the collarbone surgery. One is from 2017 and the other one from 2022. And I just don't have the time to remove them. I hope that this winter is the time to actually remove them.
Yeah.
Because you need some month.
Yeah.
To recover.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need the correct doctor that says, okay, we do that, no problem. We remove it whenever you like, because there are other people that have bigger problems than removing two plates from a shoulder.
Of course.
And but the target is this winter.
Oh, awesome, awesome. Do you find that they give you any trouble or anything, or you just want them out?
I would like to have them out because I feel them, and now is one, I don't know how you call it, because when they...
Oh, the screw?
When they stitch it back together.
Oh, yeah.
There is one blue one and it tries to come out a little bit. but I think it will stay inside. but you can feel everything here on the shoulder, and especially on the other side, there are two plates inside. It's more stable. So if you break the collarbone, let's say to the doctor, you want two plates, because it's really more stable for the first 3 weeks.
Of course.
And then you can ride more.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man. That's insane. It's absolutely unreal.
Yeah, yeah. At least coming back into Australia, as we were talking about before, what turned the weather on for you? It's not pissing down rain. It's not freezing. Like, it's actually, I guess as well with the superbikes, you're always more likely to get nice. Where every time we're in MotoGP Grand Prix, it's horrendous.
Yeah, most of the time when I was here in 2019 for the last time for Moto2.
Yeah.
And the weather was always cold, windy.
Yeah.
Especially with Moto3, the wind, I mean, it's...
It must push you around, obviously, going down that straight, doesn't it? Because they're only light, those bikes.
Yeah. I thought with a bigger bike, it's better, but it's actually similar.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's crazy. 2019 would have been the year Hafiz had the big accident at the end of the straight, I think, in MotoGP on the KTM, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right, yeah. And then we're at turn one last year, and we saw Celestino Vietti get blown off the track at turn one and just like get thrown over the handlebars. It was scary. That's scary as.
Yeah. Phillip Island is a track where if you crash, there are only two places where you're not fast. It's turn 10 and turn 4.
Yeah.
So if you crash,
that's where you want to crash.
Yeah, something. You destroy bikes.
Yeah.
I mean, and especially with the wind. If you have a bad wind where it's every lap different, you have a problem.
Mm.
If it's, okay, one day it comes from, you have tailwind on the straight and the next day you have the headwind. Okay, you understand the wind after 3-4 laps. But if you have a wind that is blowing sometimes more, sometimes less, that's where you're kind of, you go in the corner and you guess it's the break point. Good.
Oh, yeah.
Because behind the bubble, you don't feel the wind so much. But when you come out and you have a lot of wind, okay, you, fuck. I can break a little bit later. But if the wind is not there, you...
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely know what you're trying to say. Yeah.
That's a great point. I've actually spoken to a few riders about helmets. And obviously, you're running the HJC. and the Alpha One. And I've spoken to a few riders who have ran different helmet states. They see that they're not so aerodynamic. And as soon as they come out of that bubble, they're just buffering around everywhere, where like obviously a wing on a helmet makes such a big difference, you know?
In the test, I used the spoiler for the first time.
Okay.
And I'm not 100% sure if it helps or if it's a little bit disturbing, especially for example, turn three, you're so fast through that corner.
Yeah.
And because today I feel it a little bit in the back.
Yeah, right.
Or at the back. So it's difficult to say if it helps or if it disturbs you. You need to check a little bit, because in Australia and with those fast corners, you have so many fast corners, you always have a little bit problem with the neck.
Yeah, no, that's fair. It's interesting how much helmets, I guess, have just developed over the years. Like you look at someone like Arai, they're pretty much similar since the 1980s. Yeah. But that's funny. How do you find Phillip Island anyway as a track? Is it one of your, like, everyone seems to like it. Is it one of your favorites, or it's okay? Or we won't be offended if you say you don't like it.
No, I am honest, because doesn't matter the track. If you are fast,
yeah,
you like the track.
Yeah.
If you're not fast, you don't like the track.
Okay.
So the last 2 years I liked the track, and this year we will see. But I think this is the truth.
Yeah.
Because
that's true.
It's not every year the same, because some years you go to the track and it's working well.
Yeah.
It depends about all the package, the bike, if it fits the track and everything. Motorsport is a complex sport. It's not just the rider and the bike. It's all. It's like all.
Yeah. I guess you've got, you know, weather elements. You've got your team as well. It's mechanical.
Yeah. Surface.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah, it all comes into play. And I think that's what a lot of people don't understand. They just see, like you said, the rider, the bike, and the track. And they go, okay, it can't be that hard. But there's definitely a lot more to it.
It's super complicated, because you have the rider. And a human being is a really complex system already. Yeah, let's
absolutely.
Say. Then you have a bike that you can adjust corner by corner. And I mean not corner by corner, going into the corner, going through the corner, going out of the corner.
Yeah.
And then you have to. Then we start with the suspension, or then you start with the geometry. So yeah. And then you have the team, which is also very complex. How the rider influenced the team is also an important thing, because there are stories of Michael Schumacher that knows all the birth dates of all his mechanics, and in a Formula One team, that's, let's say,
very important.
That's amazing. Massive.
Yeah, and a rider can influence the team a lot, because if you don't work for a person that is an asshole. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, true.
Of course, some days you have a bad day and nothing is really working, but the mechanics are there to help you, and you should give them a feeling that you appreciate them.
Mm. That's a really good point, isn't
it? Even if they make a mistake. Yesterday we broke the engine. Okay, there is nothing they can do.
Yeah.
I had a race in Barcelona, I think 2 years ago, and new chain, and half a lap, and the chain broke. So what can you do?
Yeah, you can't do much.
Yeah.
I cannot come into the box and say, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
That's not the right way, I think.
That's interesting. So,
and then the weather and like the track and everything comes into play. So this shows how complex the sport is, because everybody, let's say, is mentally fit until a certain point. Everybody is fit physically.
Yeah.
Everybody have more or less a good bike, more or less a good team. So everybody is at 95%. And when we had the COVID races, when it was back-to-back races, and sometimes the results were like a little bit different. It was not, okay, he won the first race, he will also win the second race. It was not always like this.
Yeah.
Because it's...
Yeah. 100%. It's funny, actually. You never really think about that, do you?
No.
Like, I got to admit, I wouldn't really. You take it into consideration, but not as much as what you should. Talk us through that, actually. How do you overcome having, say, a rough weekend? I guess for you guys, you're lucky you've got race one, super pole, and race two. How do you, you know, if you've had a bad weekend fully or a bad race, how do you overcome it? What do you do?
It's difficult. now I'm 11 years in World Championship, and you still have to work. And normally you try to find the way, and if you think you are already on the right way, you still have problems. Not that I find the way and now I will be always in front. That's normally it's not the case. You always keep working. It's difficult to always keep improving and to overcome a bad weekend. Normally I go riding a little bit,
okay,
and I try to focus on the thing that worked already in the past. That's something I try to do. It's to focus on the training, and during a race weekend, normally you have to be ready from the first practice.
Of course. That's,
if you find a good way through FP1, FP2, FP3, have a good rhythm for the qualifying. The qualifying is super important.
Yeah.
Because if you're stuck in outside the top 10, super, super, super difficult.
It is, yeah.
And then a race that is also really important is Super Pole race.
Yeah.
Because if you're in the top 9, you can make a step for the second race. So it's you have to really focus on yourself.
Yeah. Okay.
On nothing else. If left and right, everybody goes faster, you still have to focus on yourself, and that's the difficult part. I think it's for everybody. It's difficult, but for me, that makes. For myself, the difference, to focus on yourself, focus on the way, focus on, try to improve the bike, try to improve the rider. It's not always the bike, because the rider can also improve the bike so much, but only until a certain point.
Of course.
Yeah. But it's complex.
Yeah, definitely is. That's nuts.
It is. I just, yeah. Obviously, we don't have that brain mentality for it. I was going to ask, going back to like weather conditions and stuff like that, what's worse? Is it tougher to ride in like extreme heat? Like we've spoken to a few riders that rode 2020 Jerez coming back after COVID, and it was extremely hot. Or is it worse to be in like super cold, wet, windy conditions?
I would say in the heat.
Yeah.
We had the week after the two GPs, there was the first superbike race in 2020 in Jerez, and it was so hot. I think at 7 o'clock on Saturday, 41 degrees. Still, that day was not like, okay, you have 28 degrees in the morning and then goes up.
Yeah,
it was like hot already. Consistent hot. Oh, and you really felt from qualifying to the race, the bike don't have power.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
It was. Back then I was on the 600, and that day was the first super sport podium I did, and it was super hot. And then of course you have to wear the mask in park. For me, I was super happy
when I could just
remove all the leather and just get into some cold water,
because
it was super, super hot. When it's cold, it's better. Even if it's windy cold, maybe not windy cold and rain, but I think in the heat, it's hard for the body.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard.
Yeah, I remember listening to a few riders and they were saying, like, even I think Pecco or something like that after the GP one, they all had burnt hands when they were behind the exhaust of someone else in that heat. Like, that is just, that must be full on. And you see riders as well, like riding in Malaysia, as soon as they get back to Parc Fermo, like they've just got water poured over them, down their suit, whatever it is.
Ice jackets.
It's just... Yeah, it must be rough.
I think also you have to consider in Superbike, our long race is shorter than a Moto3 race.
Yeah, yes. Okay, yeah.
But we have 3 races per weekend.
Yeah.
The sprint race, okay, with the 10 laps, it's okay. But the longer races, they feel long. But in reality, it's shorter than a Moto3 race.
Yeah.
So you see how long a MotoGP race really is.
Mm.
If you do 5-6 laps more, that's
hard. A lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of work. Especially Indonesia in Lombok, that's a really tough track.
Yeah.
Because you have a high grip track that forces you a lot. You have a high speed change of direction.
Yeah.
It's in Buriram, for example, I think it's a little bit easier.
Okay.
Because the track... I think it's not so demanding. You have long straights and then, let's say, simple turns. But in Indonesia, it's hard.
Yeah.
I suppose the bike, that's a good point. The bike would run pretty hot as well. I wouldn't like it at all. Mm-hmm. At least in the cooler temperatures, probably mm-hmm. runs a little bit better.
Yeah. Of course, in colder conditions, the bike runs better.
Yeah.
But in some races, not only the superbike and I guess the GPs, also the 600 bikes and Moto 2, I don't really remember Moto 3 anymore.
Yeah.
But the feet get hot, and also the hands, they yeah. get really, really hot. Sometimes you think you get blisters on
oh, really?
Foot. Like last year in Barcelona, I was close to have this kind of blister on the foot.
Wow.
I tried to cover the foot a little bit more, or leave it open with a lot of holes, but it's always hot. So you get used. You get kind of used.
Yeah.
To it, yeah. Let's say.
Jeez, that's nuts. Mm. Imagine that, getting off a bike and having blisters on.
But honestly, sometimes I think, okay, if you make a good race and you have blisters on your foot,
worth it.
It's like you say, okay, yeah, this is how it have to feel.
And yeah. also,
let's say with the arms, everything, if you have three races per weekend, the Sunday, sometimes you feel not arm pump, let's say, but I always feel like the bike is so powerful, it wants to tear your arm apart. I don't know how it is for the GP guys. They have even more power.
Mm.
But and somehow it's painful. But when you have a good race, it's like, I think this is how it should be.
Yeah, it's all worth it almost, yeah, really, yeah. isn't it? Well, I guess it is. Talk us through how you got into racing and Grand Prix, and I guess your way up through racing for yourself in Europe. Because we've only really spoken to Australians. Australian guys, yeah. So we understand a little bit for them on how they do it and have to fly over to Europe.
Yeah.
But for yourself, it's obviously you've got so many tracks right there. You're right near the European, well, you are in Europe in the Grand Prix section. So how is it for yourself?
First of all, I have huge respect for all the guys that come not from Europe, like from Australia or also with Ayumu. He's riding for Husqvarna, and you have to imagine they are most of the year, like say, let's say 10 months, they're away from family and everything. Yeah. They live in a different country where maybe in the beginning you don't even speak the language.
Yeah, that's all right.
So, I mean, and if you're 16, I mean, I have huge respect for that, because, okay, I start with motocross because my father was riding in World Championship as well. So there were always bikes around in our yard. So I say, okay, I want to do that. And with 5 years, I got the Yamaha PB50. Like,
yeah, nice.
I think the basic model for everybody. And then I start with motocross and also a little bit supermoto, because back then my father was working for a supermoto team.
Okay.
So for me, supermoto was the main target.
Like, okay.
Really, I watched the GP races, and of course I was a big fan of Rossi and then a little bit Stoner as well. And that was interesting, but for me, supermoto was the big deal.
Everyone, I've heard that was supermoto is huge in Europe.
It was much bigger when I was younger.
Yeah,
like
okay.
Around 2000 and 2005, it was pretty.
Yeah,
pretty big.
I have heard that
from a lot of people.
Yeah,
yeah, and so the connection was there with also the good riders, and I wanted to be like them. But then I don't know why, and I really don't remember. I said, maybe I would like to try a mini bike, not the pocket bike, so like the Ovale now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then we borrowed it from another rider in Germany, and it was really good. And then I say, okay, maybe I want to follow that path. Mm. And then there was 1 year where I rode the last junior class in supermoto with a 150 Honda. So it was the four stroke motocross bike, let's say a supermoto bike.
Yeah, it's CRF 150R or whatever it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Back then there was the newest
bike. Latest and greatest.
Yeah. And I did two stroke mini bike races.
Okay.
But just four, I think. And it went pretty good. I could win the championship in supermoto, and I was quite competitive with the knee down, let's say.
Oh, nice.
And then it was already the first year on the big tracks with a junior cup, was 125 Aprilia, but the production bike.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
That was the Junior Cup. And then we had the problem that the first two in the championship, they had to move into the like 125 category.
Yeah, yeah.
So in 2009 was the first year on the big tracks, and then already on the faster GP bikes, let's say. So the evolution was really fast. And also in 2009, we went to the Rookies Cup selection just to basically to ride, to have a possibility to ride a little bit in the winter. And then they select me. And then we had another, let's say, good problem, because there were 16 races. And I still went to school. And
oh, perfect.
Yeah. My mother was, let's say, not so happy back then. But she did a really good job in helping me do good in school. And that was a big help. And but then I did the first year German Championship and Rookies Cup, this for 2 years. And then we went to Spanish Championship, which is now the Junior World Championship.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Was the first year in Moto 3, and it went pretty good, but it was a really, let's say, hard field with Banaya, Baldassari, guys like this, but they were also riding in Rookies Cup, so it was a good era, and I finished fourth and overall, and the last race was in Valencia, and we got a wild card, and it was really bad weather all weekend long, and we got in the points. That was also a great moment, because Salom and Vinales was fighting for the second place World Championship, and I arrived there like I wasn't even thinking about not passing them, because I thought, okay, I gonna pass them and then I go, because then I don't disturb their battle. The funny thing is, I passed them. And then the next corner, both of them passed me again. I never see them again. But it was funny. And then we were already in World Championship. It really escalated quite quickly. It was, for me, it was always, okay, I want to be in World Championship and I want to be there.
Yeah.
But now I think I was really stupid to think that it would, because it's so difficult.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to even arrive to World Championship. It's so difficult to make points. I mean, there are so many talents. Everybody that is riding in World Championship is just so talented.
Mm.
So I was really, when I was 10, I was naive to think I can be in World Championship, because if I look now, it seems it's 1 out of 10,000 can
go all the way.
The level all over the World Championship is so high.
Yeah, and I guess it's just the best in the world all gathering in one place at the same time. But, you know, you're obviously in the World Championship for quite a few years. I think, what years were you in Moto 3 for? Was it 2013 to 2018 or something like that? How did you find... was there much development of a Moto 3 bike between those years?
Yeah, there was a lot of development.
Yeah.
Even if a lot of people say, Moto 3 is basic class, there is actually, I believe there's at least the same amount of development than in Moto 2.
Okay.
Because I was test rider in 2017 and 2018 for the new bike, because I live only 40 kilometers from the factory in Austria.
Oh, yeah.
So and there was always a good connection, and they asked me, okay, can you stay one day after the race to test the bike? We tried so many things. I mean, one day we had 8 different bikes. I mean, not 8 different bikes in the box, but we tried 8 different bikes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like carbon swing arm was tested many times in Moto 3 as well. So there is a development, and last year I was in Austria for the GP, and when you see the bike now, the steps, they're still making steps, and the bike is completely different compared to what I was riding, and still especially in 2024 there will be a big step from KTM, I guess, because they couldn't bring the new bike the last 2 years because of the COVID regulations and development regulations. I think so. I think they will make a good step, what I know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's Like, I think everyone must agree, though, that Moto3 still has to be one of the best racing in the world. Like, and even the 125s, but that lower category class of, like, you got 16, 17, 18-year-old fearless kids like yourself, like, just going for gold and going for broke. And you see some crazy wild moves happen. It's always down to the last lap, almost last corner. Like, what's it like for yourself? You obviously raced for so many years. Like, what's it like being in those moments? And obviously, you got a Grand Prix victory as well, but...
It was stressful, let's say. I always tried, if you are in the front of the group, it's the best place to be because you have less riders to deal with.
Yeah.
The more you're, let's say, from first place to 10th place, everything is so close. But when you're around that 10th place, it's a dangerous place to be in. Mm. But also when you're in Mugello and you lead the race, at the end of the straight, you can be 10th.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
it's
right.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, the slipstream effect is huge. And honestly, I prefer it when it's a group of five people fighting for the victory. But this is something you cannot choose because some races are really fast and then you see, okay, only five riders are left.
Yeah.
So that's a race where it's normally where the pace is really high. But I think Australian, it's almost impossible to go away. So doesn't make sense to push. You just have to be very, very good in strategic things.
Yeah.
But some riders have it and some, I think, really don't have it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
You're right. Like Phillip Island, Mugello, those type of tracks, big long straights. Like how can you just, you can't get away. Like it slipstream's massive.
The funny thing when I finished second in Austria, it was, okay, Mir already was... I think 2-3 seconds in the lead, but I was second for the last four laps. And you know, back then we didn't have the chicane. It's funny when I say back But back then we didn't have the chicane and the slipstream effect on the straights is big. And, but you know, in Austria, you can position yourself on the straights. So the others are always on the outside braking and you are always on the inside braking. Mm. So you can try to defend. But the problem is when they have the slipstream, they just...
Straight past.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
fair. But
still,
there are some techniques that you can use to prevent getting past easily.
Yeah, yeah. Just do a Romano Fumati and tap someone else's brake lever. Yeah.
Was maybe not the best.
Yeah. But what was it like getting that Grand Prix victory, like crossing the line?
It was really unreal because you work so long. So some people don't because they just win their first GP out of the pit box like Acosta did.
So they don't
have to wait for so long. But I thought I was always close to win a race. But actually, when I won that race, I thought like, okay, the last few times you there was missing a lot.
Mm.
I don't know, in that race, I really felt it from the beginning that today was the day.
Yeah.
It's a strange feeling because also my father said this to me that when he won a race in World Championship, he just felt it. And I felt in a similar way that day and it was working good. I had a good bike. Like all the things were working together.
Yeah, it all fell into place.
Yeah.
It's strange because, for example, after FP3, I was in 17th, like around that place.
Yeah.
But... Before the qualifying, I was super relaxed because I knew, okay, with the used tire, I have a good pace and we just put in the new tires and will be a good qualifying. And then whatever will happen on Sunday, it's not really in your control. But I tried my best and it was just working. But it was really special because it was the team of my father and my crew chief was actually the crew chief of my father. And he worked for me since 2010, since we started, let's say, the 125 project and he helped me so much and back then we had 75 sponsors from let's say big to small and we were fighting against the Rossi team and everything they were quite big teams with let's say big sponsors
big backing
it was a really special moment to be honest really really special moment
that's right.
That's amazing that all falls into place. And it was on your birthday as well. Is that correct?
3 days after.
Three days after. There you go.
Yeah.
Good birthday present.
Yeah. And like you said, it must have been pretty special, your father being a Grand Prix winner himself.
Yeah.
That must have been really cool as a father and son.
Honestly, the good thing is with my father, I have a really good relationship. And he's the best man to take with me for all the training sessions and things like that, because he has the experience.
Of course.
And he made experiences. And when I make a similar experience, I can ask him, hey, I have a strange question.
Yeah.
Maybe you can answer it. And because many riders, their parents don't understand as much. Yeah, because they don't have maybe the riding background.
Yeah.
So they need a manager or a riding coach. And for me, it was always my father, everything in one person.
Perfect.
So I'm really lucky that my father can help me with everything. And I'm in a really fortunate place.
That's amazing. That's so good. That's crazy. And you're up against a pretty tough field as well.
Yeah, I think every year is really tough.
Yeah.
But when I see the names, also now when you watch the Superbike list of names and you think like, what the fuck is going on?
I know.
Also in GP is like, at the end of the year, maybe one or two riders have to move because riders come from the lower categories to replace them. It's like, but who you want to send away?
I mean, that's right.
That's pretty crazy, and especially in the moment. I think a few years back was a little bit more easy.
Yep.
To say, okay, you are not fast, but in the end, everybody was on the podium. Let's say in 1 year, all the MotoGP riders make one podium, at least in one race. So they're all so good. That means.
Who do you get rid of?
Yeah, it's really, really difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes they, like you said, they come across into where you are now and you just go, Jesus.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. I think the level all over the World Championship classes is super high at the moment.
Yeah, it has to be just about as competitive as it's ever been through, World Supers, Super Sport, MotoGP and down. Yeah. Like, it's good luck. Like, we were talking about the MotoGP season the other day in one of our other podcasts, and we're saying, good luck picking the top three of that world championship, because it could be realistically anyone.
Mm. Yeah, it's just too hard to even think about. But even like in the World Superbike Championship, I've been trying to work out who's going to do what, and it's just way too hard to tell.
In the moment, I think there are some riders that can win the world championship.
Yeah,
it's super difficult to say. Even after Australia, it will be difficult to really say, okay, he can fight or he is a real contender, because you have maybe 20 riders that can make a top 10, but you know, the top 10 is only 10 riders.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to say in the moment. I think we have to wait until after Assen to really see, because now we have three different tracks. We have Australia, that is always the first race. It's a little bit special. Then we have Barcelona with like zero grip. And then we have Assen with, it's narrow, it's tight. Let's say it's a Yamaha track. And because you have a lot of turns, I think we have to wait. We have to wait a little bit, because it's difficult to predict in the moment.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm actually really excited for the Assen. It's such a good track.
Yeah, I love Assen.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you find that track?
It's nice. I've been there for the first time in 2009.
Yeah.
Hasn't changed since then. No, it's a good track. Okay, it's far from home, but it's a good track for us, and I like it. Also, with the Ducati was really nice, but the first year I was there, I think 50% of the time the front wheel is in the air, and you have say a track that is the width of a cycling path.
Oh
yeah,
at least with a superbike, but then when you trust the electronics, let's say, then you think you fly.
Because, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you trust it. You go behind the fairing, the front wheel is up, and you think like, okay, it will come down sooner or later.
Hopefully. With the electronics on the superbike, you've got whole, you guys have like whole shot devices or something like that?
No.
So it's just going to clutch it out?
You have a launch control, but it's only, let's say, for the RPM, and it helps you a little bit for the wheelie.
Okay, right.
I think it's quite simple.
Yeah, gotcha. Because like you see though, like yourself and everyone there, like you've just, I feel like you've just got it pinned and it just, you let it out. Like the trust, I feel like you'd still have to have in one of those bikes, you know, because knowing my luck, I'd do it and the whole thing would just launch me into the space shuttle, space station.
Yeah, I think, I don't know how it works in MotoGP, but it looks, they can start really, really well. But also in Superbike, you can start well. But
yeah.
I don't know how it is in MotoGP because a MotoGP rider can tell you now, no, it's not like you can just drop the clutch because I think that would be a little bit too easy. In Superbike, I found a little bit my way to have consistent good starts, let's say. And it's important to find a way even when you have controls. The RPM, you have a limiter for the RPM, which is good, so you can open the throttle and you have your good RPM, good torque RPM, so you can just go.
Yeah.
So you don't go in the complete limiter, which is bad for the engine.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
But it's fair enough. You still need a little bit help for the wheelie sometimes.
Yeah.
Because the front is not, like in MotoGP, it's not down, or the rear is down.
And there's still so much power, like those super bikes have got more than enough power, really. Mm. Yeah.
Too much power. Yeah. Too scary for me.
Yeah.
We spoke about it just before we started, but you did a bit of endurance racing. How'd that come about, and what do you think of your time in the endurance series?
Yeah, it's really, really interesting, and you learn a lot. I mean, a lot. Because the first year, it was Tuesday before the race, and we came back from Aragon test, and Aragon race was the first Superbike World Championship race. So I come back. I thought I will have a nice weekend off. And then on Tuesday, Xavi Forres wrote me a WhatsApp, and he asked me, "Oh, okay, we have a problem. We need one rider for that bike. Those are the conditions you want to ride. Please, until 4 o'clock.
Yes or no.
It was Tuesday morning. I said, okay, maybe today take one day off. And then I was like, okay, sure. I want to do it because it's with Xavi Forres and with David Checa, two good riders.
Yeah.
And with the good bike, I think, okay, I want to do it. I called my father immediately. He say, don't do it because it's shit, it's hard. I mean, when you do it, when you're on the bike in the night, you will say it was a big mistake. And I say I thought, okay, what does he know about it? I will do it. Okay, I did it. I flew to France, I think Wednesday morning, and Thursday morning I was on the bike.
Crazy.
Because the practice was already on.
Yeah.
Because on Tuesday was the complete day of riding. I jump on the bike, big fuel tank. Okay, I knew the Ducati from World Superbike, but obviously this bike was completely different.
Of course.
And also adjusted a little bit different, but the handlebar position was more or less okay. And we were fast, and also in the night, the problem was they asked me because they need a fast rider, and I was never riding in the dark because in Qatar it's not dark. You ride with the dark visor, so it tells you it's not that dark. So and then you go out and it's dark, and I heard that Le Mans is not bad. It's good.
Yeah,
you can see where you're going, and you have also 55 other riders.
Yeah,
yeah. You can follow.
That's crazy. You definitely learn how to overtake riders.
Okay.
That's because you have 55 riders on 4.1 kilometers of track, and the difference between the fastest lap time and the slowest lap time is 10 seconds. So you always have to keep going, and you need to push because in the end also the lap time matters. But riding in the dark was in the night was a nice experience, but you have to get used to it.
This
is very important because everything, you feel fast but you are not fast. Because you see nothing or not a lot, but it was super, super interesting. But after the first stint, I had no experience. And when you ride with, this is a team effort. It's not just,
it's not one person.
You throw away race one in Superbike. Okay. It was your mistake. when you crash or make a mistake, all the team suffers from your mistake. And that's something, let's say, special, but you also have to move this aside.
Yeah, of course, can't think about it.
But it's like this. And I thought, okay, I jump on the bike, I try to make everything perfect, because also you have to, there are rules in the pit lane to, when there are four mechanics on the bike, you cannot touch the bike. Even if you just touch the bike like this, that's forbidden. So things like that I needed to learn. And no, but I went out, and after the first stint, I was completely wasted. I was tired, because we did, let's say, 33 laps. That's a lot.
That's a
lot. And then you have to make it 8 times. Let's say more or less 8 times. And I thought, okay, it's a race. I took it as a race, and I push all the time, 100%. But you can't do that.
I mean, you
just have to calm down a little bit. But honestly, the first exit punished me for all the race.
Because
it was difficult to recover from that. And the second year was actually better. I really wanted to make the start. And David Cecca, I think he did it already, maybe, let's say, 50 times.
So. Yeah, he's done it a lot.
Yeah. And I was riding also with Chas Davis, which was also really
great.
That's
amazing. That's cool. That's really cool.
I mean, the group of riders.
That's a good group.
It was unbelievable. I think it was super cool. And because I learned a lot from them too, because
of course,
Chas is not racing against me. Cecca is not racing against me.
Yeah.
I can just learn from
them.
They
can share secrets now.
Yeah. And they have a lot of them.
Of course.
And then I made the start, and it was amazing, because you arrive to the start like 1 hour before the actual start, and I just ask, okay, how is the procedure and everything, and especially if they don't have the red light, they don't have this, they have the flag, and this guy with the flag stands in the middle of the track, but let's say 250 meters away from me.
Yeah.
So I had difficulties to see that guy, because we started around sixth place. It was difficult to see that guy.
Yeah,
of course. And the Ducati didn't start that well compared to the Japanese bikes, let's say.
Yep.
But we had a solid start. But then you wait on the grid for 1 hour, you ride for 1 hour, and the first hour is together with the others. But it's not a race. If you fuck up there,
that's it.
It's stupid.
Yeah.
Just go with them. And then the safety car, and in the middle of the night we had 3 degrees safety car, 5 laps, because when there is oil on the track, there is no red flag, huh?
Yeah,
they just send out the machines and the safety car, and then it's for 5-6 laps they clean the track, and then you have obviously cold tires,
very cold tires,
and it's super super interesting. You learn so many things about the bike, about what's possible, because when it's 3 degrees you will never unload your bike or a MotoGP bike on a track. I mean, you wait until it's getting better.
Of course.
But you don't have a choice. So it's super interesting. And the second year was easier because of the experience from the first year. That's, let's say.
How do you find, like, we had pod favorite Damien Cudlin, who's raced heaps of endurance on here, and he was talking to us about that. And we're talking about sleep deprivation. How was that for yourself? Like, because he was told not to really get into like a REM sleep, like a deep sleep. Is that something you guys had to do as well?
In the second year, I didn't even realize I was sleeping, because it was around 5 to 6 o'clock in the morning. That's the point where you really get tired, because it's when the sun comes up and oof. And you still have until 3 o'clock. So it's still
it's a lot.
Yeah.
8 hours. Still 8 hours. So you have to ride, let's say, 3 times. And it's getting tough. It's getting tough. And I felt that way. When you start to sleep or fall asleep, the next stint normally is a little bit strange. It's difficult. But honestly, I think it's for everybody. It's the same. They all feel the same. Because even we had 2 years, we had okay weather. Okay, it was cold the second year, but it wasn't raining. We had no really strange conditions. It was okay. And we had a good physio. We had good food. Everything was so perfect. And still it was so, so hard to just survive I mean, we are all well trained, but nothing really can prepare you for that race. I mean, those races are hard, really hard.
Yeah, that's all we've really heard is how just difficult they are. Yeah. And
for me, I heard a lot of stories about Suzuka, and I think Suzuka is also really tough because it's 8 hours and it's more of a sprint race.
Yeah.
But I say 12 hours, 8 hours is...
Yeah.
But 24, it's... David Checker actually was the fittest of us all.
Okay. Yeah. Just from experience?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea how he is doing it. He's 43. It's not old, but he did it for so long. I think it has to be something with experience, but also how he is, how, I don't know, he's a very, very special guy for the endurance, and
yeah,
so much knowledge, so much everything. It's unbelievable. After the race, he is okay. I mean, we are all dead. Chas was dead. Me was dead. He was fine.
Wow. It must be obviously experience, but just a mental aspect going into it. And then even through it, on how you just approach things, like going in to do a stint at 3 a.m. or 6 a.m. Like, you know, you obviously, to anyone that has to do that, has to have a lot of mental resilience as well, because, yeah, riding a bike like that through like a cold night, whatever it is, and then you don't want to crash because you're now on a team and you don't want to let anyone down at the same time. You've still got three other riders as teammates. So it's so impressive. And realistically, it's underappreciated as well, a lot of that endurance racing.
I think so. The lap times are slower also because of the bikes, because the bikes in the end have to do 24 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The brake pads, they cannot be that good because they need to last 8 hours. Then they change the brake caliper completely.
Oh, wow.
For me, it's very specific kind of racing. You cannot compare it so much to what we do in World Superbike, because also the bike is a compromise. The compromise for all the three riders.
Yeah.
Seat position. The bike is a compromise.
Yeah.
So you can ride fast, but only in the qualifying. And then they are actually quite fast, you have to say. Tire is a big thing. I think that the Bridgestone tires are quite good. With the Pirelli tires, it was also good in Le Mans, but we struggle more on other tracks. And because we ride the tires from World Superbike, and they are, let's say, sensitive. And in a 24-hour race, you have stints where the humidity, or also the humidity go up and the temperature go really down. And then the tire, which is good for the first 10 laps, struggles a lot for the rest of it. But you have to finish the stint. You cannot come in too early because the team is maybe not prepared, or it's not, you have to follow also the strategy. So the tire is quite important. But for example, in Le Mans and also in the Boldor, the Pirelli is really, really competitive. And also the Ducati can make, for example, the 24 hours. The last two times when I did the 24 hour, it was really impressive how well the bike worked and how consistent it worked.
Yeah.
But, as you said, I think that the championship is maybe a little bit underrated because they still have a lot of fast riders there.
100%.
There's a lot of quick guys.
Yeah. But I think it's a difficult question.
Yeah.
Because I think it's getting better and better.
Yeah.
But they need more races.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's something I think, and I heard from some other riders. But they're... especially when you look at David Checker, in the night, he is incredible fast. In the night, he is faster than me, and sometimes also faster than Chas Davis.
Yeah, well.
During the day, maybe not. And for that one lap time, maybe not. But he is someone, if I can pick riders, I take David Checker, because I can rely on that guy.
Yeah.
Because in 24 hour, if some guy gets injured, he is there.
Yeah.
He will solve many problems. Even if you have to make a double stint, he will make three stints. I mean, he doesn't like it, but he do it because he is so hard. He is a really tough guy.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's really cool to hear. Yeah, we find that endurance stuff so interesting, whether it's cars or bikes.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah. And just how the bike just mechanically will get through 24 hours as well. It's just amazing in itself.
Maybe to come back, if you ask me 2 years ago, who is your favorite rider? I wouldn't say David Checa because I don't know him. Mm. Now I would say for me, a person that is like him is a hero.
Yeah,
because he is an endurance guy and he does this really, really well. He knows everything and he is such a nice person and he helped me so much to learn.
Yeah.
No other rider helped me that much in the last few years with that to learn. It was really impressive. So for this, if I had to choose a rider now, it would be him.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really cool. Well, we have to have to get us in touch with him. We'll have to get him on the pod to pick his brain.
Crazy stories.
Yeah, for sure. The photo you just showed us before the pod of your eyes, we'll clip it in here, is one of the most insane things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was because normally the 24-hour start and 1 hour after the start and 1 hour before the finish, normally the fans are there.
Yeah.
And during the other 22 hours, they are on the camping site.
Yeah.
And they make barbecue and everything. And during the night, the smoke of the barbecue like crawls into the race. So you go out 3 o'clock in the morning, you smell sausage in your helmet. I mean, it is really like this.
That's so good.
And then your eyes start to burn.
Of course.
The problem is, of course, when you close the ventilation, it's getting hot.
Yeah.
When you open the ventilation, you get that air inside. And the second year wasn't that bad because maybe they did something else. Mm. But the first year was like this. And the eyes really hurt. And we always put fluid inside of the eyes to...
All right.
I wouldn't have thought. Yeah, I thought it would have been more from the sleep. But there you go. From the delicious barbecue in the
It was... You're awake for 40 hours.
Yeah.
Because you wake up, you have to warm up, you wait until 3 o'clock, then this race starts, and you never sleep.
Oh,
especially the first year, I was always on the TV, where are we? And you want to check how it's going. The second year, I...
Just relax.
I come in the box, okay, see you later, guys. It's really like this.
That's so good. Oh,
that's funny. I'd be tempted just to pull over and grab a sausage from one of the campsites and keep on going.
Go and party with them.
I think you can have a good party there.
Yeah, I remember Damien was saying pretty good. That.
Yeah. If you finish the race early with a blown engine or something, then you can go there, I guess.
Yeah, go straight into the middle, I guess, and I think it is, and party with the French.
That's cool. Awesome. You mentioned it briefly before. What's it like trying to get a setup for three people? How difficult is it? Do you get there a couple of days before, try work out what's going to be best for everyone? Mm,
I think so. The good thing was with the two other riders, it was very good because we always gave the same feedback.
Oh, amazing.
The problem starts when you have three guys that goes in three different directions.
Yeah.
Size-wise, Chas was bigger than me. And I think also David is a little bit bigger than me. But we didn't have a problem with the lever or anything, so it was well adjusted. So, and we always because we had two bikes and we all preferred that bike is better than the other, even if they were exactly the same, we say that bike is better, okay, so we choose that bike. So it was always simple for us to find the solution. So I cannot really say there was a problem with setting up the bike because we always wanted the same thing, always wanted the same tire, so our feedback was always the same, and then it's easy. I think if everybody wants something else, then
it's tough after that.
Yeah,
that definitely makes life so much easier when you're all on the same level.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned earlier, when everything's working perfect, that's, you know, it's great.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
What's it? How you're finding? I guess World Superbikes anyway. It must be a lot different, obviously, to Grand Prix racing you've done for so many years, but it always seems to be the World Superbike paddock's a lot more laid back, I guess you could say. Mm. How do you find that?
I think it's a little bit more simple.
Yeah.
For me, the MotoGP World Championship goes a little bit in the direction of Formula One.
100%. Yeah.
Okay.
We talk about it a lot.
Yeah, we say it all the time.
It's just my personal opinion, but I think it's also, it's good in one way. Maybe it's bad in another way. For example, the fans can enter the paddock in World Superbike and they can get in touch with the riders.
Mm.
The problem for the riders, I have to speak for the riders as well, because we have to work here and we cannot always spend half an hour for all the signings because we have to go back to work. So if it's more restricted in the GPs, it's maybe sometimes better for the riders because they can focus better on the work. But on the other side, the spectator want to be close to the riders. For this, the podium in the paddock is good because they get close to the riders. This is an advantage. I think MotoGP has every right to go in that direction of Formula One. Also, I see that there is a discussion about the wings and everything and what they do and how the bike developed from even 5 years ago. They look really, really like a spaceship.
Yeah.
Even if you compare it to a superbike that, as we speak before, you change every single part from the stock bike to the race bike. But I think it's good to have to show what is possible on a motorbike.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I hope that, because I really cannot say something because I've never ridden a MotoGP bike in that area, if it's really that more difficult to overtake somebody. Because also when you, I don't know, but I can just imagine when we had the situation in Valencia and Bagnaia was leading and Martin was behind. When you go behind the rider and you have a certain amount of slipstream and you brake, and you always brake behind somebody, you cannot stop as good as when you are outside of somebody.
Of course.
Because the wind is less, and this doesn't matter if you have wings or not. Mm. It will always be like this. But of course, I think that the wings change a little bit the behavior of the wind behind the bike.
Yeah, for yes. sure.
I can imagine that, but I don't know if it makes really the overtaking that much harder, but I cannot really say it because I ride the World Superbike.
Yeah.
Of course.
And it's World Superbike is also difficult to pass, but maybe not as difficult with the MotoGP bikes.
Yeah.
And I think also it's really difficult for a World Superbike rider go in MotoGP, make a wildcard because of also the ride height device and how complex the bikes are there of now. Course. When Bayliss did the famous wildcard, or I remember that he won the race and was fantastic, but it was different, I say, because back then I think this was a bike
yeah.
And now it's World Superbike and MotoGP, and I think it's a big gap,
very different,
I think.
Mm. Yeah,
but maybe you have to ask Ikali Kona, because he went back and forth.
True,
last year he did a lot.
Yeah, he did a lot of wildcards. I think he is the best person to ask in the moment.
We'll have to get him on the pod this weekend, I reckon. Have to put in a good word for us.
Yeah.
Tap him on the shoulder.
Yeah, tap him on the shoulder. It's you make a great point because we have this debate all the time on our like weekly show. You want to see MotoGP progress, obviously, because that helps their production bikes as well.
Yeah.
With the winglets and everything like that. But do they look great? My opinion, probably not. Do they create better racing? Again, my opinion, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you look at the racing in MotoGP 10 years ago, I think it was a lot better. As in, I shouldn't say better. I would say you could tail someone, I guess, for longer without
cooking your tires
or getting disturbed by air, and even Toto Wolff in F1 said MotoGP is going too aerodynamic, which is kind of funny coming from Formula One, where they're actually trying to go the opposite. So it is such a fine line, and I don't claim to know the answer. I'm just a podcaster from Melbourne that enjoys motorcycles, mm-hmm. but you still need to have the best technology showcased. I just wouldn't know where that line is. I think MotoGP in 2013, from 2012 to 2013, they had the CRT era, yeah. whatever it is, and then they brought in controlled electronics, ECUs. And I thought that was really good because that kind of closed the gap. So, like, you know, Honda might be spending, let's just say round numbers, $30 million on an ECU, where maybe Aprilia could only spend $10 million.
Yeah, that's right.
Crazy. It's way round too numbers. Different. It's where now that really brought that gap back, and maybe they need something like that. But I don't know. Just put me in the head of Dorna and I'll figure it out for you guys.
It's always so difficult to say what will make a championship more interesting. Also with the Formula One, I think they went already in the right direction with the new aerodynamics because they can drive a little bit closer next to each other. But maybe they have some other rules that are in place that I think should be changed. Yeah. But I'm not so close.
Yeah.
In MotoGP, as you said, I think it's important to show what is possible.
Yeah.
I think that the bikes are so close now. I think a few years back the bikes were much more far apart. Customer teams now they have access to really, really good bikes that are really close to the factory bikes, I guess. Last year I was riding for Ducati and they say it's more or less everybody in Ducati have more or less the same package, so I think that's a good thing. Because it makes the racing more close. And honestly, also, I don't know, but for Ducati, I heard a few years back, if the customer team win the world championship, it's good for them because they show that they give good material to everybody.
Yeah.
I know that there have been a controversy, you know, with Martin and
they
gave him the bad tire. I really don't know. And me as a person, I don't believe in things like that.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm, let's say, too naive, but I think it would be good. Anyway, for me, Bagnaia deserve the title.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Because it's always a result from all the year.
Yeah.
And consistency is key. And but let's see how it will be this year.
Yeah, that's it. It'll be interesting. G'day, guys. James here from Motorsport Republica. Our brand new t-shirts have dropped. So we have Marquez, we've got Daniel Ricciardo, we've got Verstappen, Charles Leclerc in men and women, and a Gent Lawrence, Hunter Lawrence double champs tee. Jump onto motorsportrepublica.com.au, check out our new tees. We've got air freshener still on there. Go on our socials, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. It's all on there. Make sure to check it out. All your support means everything. Thanks, guys.
So talk us through the feel of being in the unknown, I guess. Lost the ride with the Ducati and then picked up the ride with the GMT 94 squad almost sort of last minute. What were you thinking of while all this was happening?
Yeah, I think I have to get back to the beginning. We had a really great race here last year with P5, P6. It was good. And then we kind of struggled a little bit for some races. And then we got we had a test in Misano, and for the race in Misano, we got a part that really helped us and we went back into the top 10. Then we had some engine problems and I made also huge mistakes in the qualifying and in Imola and also in Most where I crashed in qualifying and had to start from quite back. That was my mistake and I knew, okay, I cannot continue with the team and with Ducati because Andrea Iannone will come. And I realized that it was not. Then we had the summer break and it was not an easy moment.
Yeah.
For sure. But somehow it didn't affect me so much.
Okay.
I don't know why. Anyway. The days before we went to Magny-Cours, because also when I did the mistakes in Most, I knew the speed. For example, in FP3, we were in P5 and I was really motivated for the qualifying and maybe too motivated, and I made two mistakes. Okay, this can happen. But I really felt that the bike was in a good place.
Yep.
And my riding was in a good place. And before the week off Magny-Cours, I went with my Supermoto club to one Italian track where we always go, and we had a good time. We had fun, eat pizza and everything. You know, beautiful. Just have fun. And for me, relax. That's kind of relaxed, because they are there for fun and I'm there for practice. But then I'm there with them and I watch them how they have fun, you know. And it was good. But on the way back from Italy to Germany, I flew to Magny-Cours the next morning. Obviously, they explained me, okay, it's not possible to stay there. So let's say motivation, not motivation, but the mood was quite low.
Of course.
In Magny-Cours. And okay, I thought, but over the summer break, there were some proposals from various championships.
Oh, beautiful.
So that helped me, because I thought, oh, okay, they are interested in me.
Yeah, that's really good to know.
And that was, I tried to take energy from those kind of things.
Beautiful.
So obviously the situation was not funny. But then in Magny-Cours, we had three top 10 finishes, and we went to Aragon. We had another top 6, top 7. We went to Portimao, another two top 10. So, and then we had another 3 week break to Jerez. And of course I was in contact with GMT and with some other teams as well. And step by step, all the doors were closing.
Okay.
Even though it was looking promising, everything was closing. And also the door with GMT was closing. And I thought, okay, I will go to Jerez. I don't have a ride. It was difficult, but I will just enjoy, because I had a really good relationship with the team. Yeah. And we were just a group of friends. We ride with the Ducati and we have fun.
Perfect.
Okay, that was my motivation. But of course, I wanted to have something good.
Mm.
But in that moment, I said, okay, if I cannot stay in Superbike and try to achieve the goals I have to focus on something else. So I have to focus on maybe go to endurance, because endurance in the last 2 years was something that really, I don't know why, because I tell you how hard it is.
Yeah.
I would like to do that in the future. And there was one or two offers where I say, that's really interesting.
Okay, cool.
But I thought it's too early. It's too early to go in endurance.
Yeah.
With the current speed I had at the end of last year.
Yeah, still got a lot to offer.
That's what I thought. But if you cannot do that, so, okay, you don't have a other choice.
That's
so
right.
I was already thinking about something else. And I was focusing on the last race. We did well. We finished, I think, in P6 and another two P7. Yeah. So it was good end to the season.
Yeah, really strong.
And I went home and I was just waiting. And also I tried to relax a little bit, try to do things that I enjoy.
Yeah.
And then there was a possibility to continue in Superbike with GMT.
Perfect.
But the main thing was the last race in Jerez.
Yeah.
But before the FP1, I was not sure if I can do a good job this weekend, because okay. I was thinking a lot, because
in the
end, this is your life and you want to continue that way.
Yeah. You want to stay in that zone.
Yeah. But then from FP1, I had a good feeling with the bike, and then I just enjoyed.
Amazing.
It was difficult, but the time for me is not, I don't see it negative that time, even though it was maybe difficult from the outset. For me, it felt not so bad, but I cannot say why. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Because I was just happy with my riding, and that was the base of everything else. And then when Christoph called me, okay, it's possible, I say, yeah, I do it.
Yeah, of course.
Because I would like to stay there, and let's see how far we can go. And now it's a new project.
Absolutely. How are you finding adapting to the Yamaha?
It's a completely different bike.
Of course.
Different philosophy, and you have to adapt to it. And I think it's a competitive bike, but you have to ride it in a different way.
Yep.
It's because the Ducati is a specific bike, and also the Yamaha is on a specific bike in a certain way, because you can stop it really well. Like, let's say all the corner part is a strong part of the Yamaha.
Yeah. I think we've seen that throughout
yeah.
last year as well.
You can brake incredibly late. Of course, maybe not as late as Toprak, but you understand his riding style better when you're on that bike.
Yeah.
Let's say.
Yeah.
But I think there are a lot of riding styles that can lead you to success.
Of course. Because there's not just one way.
Yeah, there's not just one way. And especially, I think, in the World Superbike, you have many different manufacturers, and they're all riding at least at one point in the front. So it says, okay, their bike work, and every rider can make it work. I think there is not one way to go with your riding style.
Yeah.
I think there is a certain window what you have to take into account, and then you're fast, but it's not you have to ride like this and
that's everything. It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's I think it's not like this.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I have to commend you. You have a really good attitude, like really positive. You know, it's really cool. I guess it's cool to see. Like you're always looking at the bright side of things, like yeah. you're a glass half full type of person. And I think that's just amazing. It's really obviously it's probably what you need as well when what you're doing, but it's just great to see, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's inspiring.
I think of course you want to win, but for example last year it was especially at the end of last season when I knew I was on a competitive bike in a really good team. The last part of the year we had everything going well.
Mm.
It was good combination, even though we knew at the end of the season it's over. Everybody was sad after the last race, but in the end we had a really good group.
Yeah.
And then to go to the races and ride with people like, let's say, Petrucci, that won MotoGP races, and I consider myself as a okay rider, but you fight with somebody that won MotoGP yeah. races, and also here last year when you passed Jonathan Rea, you get like, okay, don't make something wrong, or
yeah.
I mean, behave.
Yeah.
you pass them, and you know how high the level is
yeah.
to appreciate a fifth place,
yeah.
and even
yeah.
a top 10. Yeah. I know how high the level is, and even to the outside, okay, he finished in the top 10. He finished in P11. He finished in P5. It's not on the podium. I know that, and
yeah.
I know. But I know the level I was riding on that day.
Yeah. yeah.
And that's, you have to look at it. For me, it's easy to look at it in that way
mm.
because I think I understand the world of racing.
Mm.
Let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Because, more in depth.
Because for the outside people, it's sometimes really not that easy to understand
of course.
How difficult it yeah. really is. That's my opinion.
No, I think you could be 100% correct though. Like to be in the world superbikes, the world super sport, or any world stage in anything, especially motorcycles, like you have to be an incredible rider and have to come through a lot of adversity as well. Like the challenges just to get to where you are, you know, the amount of different championships you have to do, traveling all around the world, you know, leaving your family, yeah, leaving your friends, the sacrifices, yeah. it's a lot. And it's, again, probably something a lot of fans and a lot of people don't see, but it's true. And we've found that, you know, speaking to people like you, or obviously Australians going over, and, you know, you can't go back to Australia for 10 months a year, 8 months a year. It's really good to hear though. Like it's very, very interesting. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's phenomenal insight. And like you said, the people that just look at it results based go, oh, he didn't do that good. But like you said, when you look at who's on the grid and how you're fighting and trying to get into those positions, you go, that's a bloody good race.
Mm.
Yeah, that's how I see it. And yeah. I think it's the correct way to see it. And it's not, of course, you want to win, but sometimes you have to take it step by step. That's the thing. Not everybody can win the races.
That's right.
I think a very little amount of people will win races. That's
Yeah.
Because if you look at people like Marquez, how many races they won. I mean, yeah. So many people that finish only second, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, it's finishing second too. Yeah. 100%. 100%. So coming into this year, what are your goals? What do you want to achieve?
In the moment, it's really difficult to say.
Yeah.
Because I still need time with that bike. I need to make it mine, the bike. And we still need time for that. But I think when we find our way, I would like to fight for the top 10.
Beautiful.
I think that's a goal that is really hard to achieve also this year. But I think when you find your way, it's possible. But as I said, maybe 20 riders can achieve the top 10.
Course.
So let's see. But this is my goal. And let's see. In the moment, I take everything step by step and think that's the right approach. Try to improve the bike, try to improve my riding. And that's the main goal. In the moment, we don't focus so much on the positions. It sounds boring, but that's how it is.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's fair. That's definitely fair.
Like you said before, everything will just fall into place afterwards. Mm. You get all that right and...
Hopefully, yes. Normally, when you work correctly, it's getting better.
Results will come.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But the others don't sleep, huh?
Yeah.
That's right.
That's true.
Very, very true.
We've spoken, obviously, you've done this for a long time. You've ridden so many different categories and bikes, everything like that. I have to ask, what's your favorite track and what's your favorite corner?
Yeah. As before, normally the tracks where you go fast,
you
like them.
Yeah.
This depends year to year.
Okay.
At least in my case. I think Jerez for me is one of my favorite tracks. Yeah. Also track. Austria, I have to say, because it was always a good event, let's say. And Estoril, I like.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, nice.
It's... I don't know. With the super sport bike, it was always good.
Yeah, nice.
And for me, with Senna winning his first race there, and still the tribunes are the same to when he won.
So yeah.
Somehow it's really, really
nice. I love it.
Yeah. And of course, Phillip Island is a track I like because it's so fast, especially turn three. Mm, but what's a good corner? It's difficult to say. Turn three here is... Like Stoner
corner.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
good answer.
That's good. Good corner.
I love it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And growing up, who were some of your idols?
I have to say Rossi and Stoner.
Yeah.
That's how I remember. Yeah.
It's so interesting. Everyone we speak to says Casey Stoner. Everyone we speak to has said Casey Stoner. Like, it just, like, maybe we're talking for granted or something down here, but like, obviously his riding style, It's been everyone, hasn't it?
It has, yeah.
The riding style was back then was impressive. I mean,
sliding the rear.
Yeah.
Mate, thanks so much for coming on. Just before you go, we do have a bit of a present for you. Give me one second, I'll grab it.
Shout out to Stacey from HJC Australia. Thanks for organising this. Just something for you, Philip. We like to give our guests something whenever they come on, so
thank
we always
much.
Appreciate time and. Yeah, just
thank
something,
you very much.
Little gesture.
That's pretty.
Yeah, HJC helmet for you. We signed it.
That's good.
Our signatures mean a lot, but we gave you a bit of a message.
Thank you very much.
That's all right. No worries. We really appreciate you obviously coming on. Good
worry.
Luck for the weekend as well. We'll be cheering you on. And
thank you.
I'm sure we'll see you in the back of the pits as well.
Perfect.
Done.
Was a pleasure.
Thank you, mate.
Thanks,
cheers.
Guys. Cheers.
Thanks.
Thank you.